from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
This is The Blitz. The first look at the top stories in Seattle sports.
Come on, we need big energy. Let's go. We're just getting warmed up.
The rundown on everything Seattle sports on your way to work.
Swing and a fly ball. Deep right center field. He did it again.
And the stories everyone is talking about.
Russell takes the side. Let's go to the top. He's got him in.
Let's go. Let's go to work.
This is The Blitz at 6.
Come on.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you Wednesday, October 16th. And you can't say that being a fan of the NFC West, or at least keeping your eyes on it, has been boring by any means this season. Yesterday, the Rams making big moves to acquire star cornerback Jalen Ramsey from the Jaguars, sending two first-round picks in that mix. We'll discuss. Plus, they also traded Marcus Peters away. So what does this mean for moves in their secondary and their cap space here moving ahead? Also, does this mean they are going for broke, going to win in the next 2 years? What does that say about how they view the Seahawks, how they view the 49ers? All ahead in this hour. We'll hear from some of the hosts at 710 on their thoughts on that trade as well, whether he was worth giving up two first-round picks. Hasn't been a problem in recent years for the Rams, who haven't made a first-round selection since 2016, and that was Jared Goff with was the first overall selection. So it's been working pretty well for them as of late, but long-term, will this deal play out for him and implications for the Seahawks? Also, first day of the XFL draft in the books, and some local products, including former Seahawks and former Huskies, going to the Seattle Dragons. That's going to be fun to watch and fun to talk about. Our own Jessamyn McIntyre catching up with one of those guys, and we've got some great sound from Kaysen Williams, preseason hero in Seattle for the Seahawks, and also UW star, local Skyline High product, our own Jake Heaps. Man, that duo, plenty of magic happening between them. So that also in this hour, plus action in baseball yesterday, the Astros over the Yankees, the Nationals headed to the World Series for the first time, meaning, well, the Mariners are the only team still looking out in the cold there. It's all ahead in your headlines right now. Let's get to them.
We were wondering why the Rams would trade away Marcus Peters when Aqib Talib is out, so you got your two corners out. Well, according to Adam Schefter here, it's happening. Former Jags cornerback Jalen Ramsey is being traded to the Rams for two first-round picks in 2020 and 21, and a fourth-round pick in 21 as well, sources tell ESPN.
Our own Bob Stelton announcing that news yesterday on his show in the afternoon. But busy day in Los Angeles. The Rams acquired Jalen Ramsey from the Jags Tuesday night from East Coast to West Coast for the star cornerback. Ramsey's mercurial tenure in Jacksonville ends, and his time with the NFC defending champs, who are going through their own up and down times, their own struggles as of now, it begins. Jacksonville got first round picks from the Rams in 2020 and 2021, along with a fourth round pick in 2021. So let's just recap. Two first round picks, one in each of the next 2 years. Ramsey, now he's a great player. He earned two Pro Bowl selections, one first team All-Pro nod in 3 seasons with the Jags. Talent not in dispute, has 9 career interceptions for the fifth overall pick in the 2016 draft. But he has also had some off-the-field issues, well, with the team, some disagreements. He missed the Jags' last 3 games with an apparent back injury, quote-unquote back injury, but returned to practice last week. And then the Rams are looking to get immediate use out of him. They'll be playing without both of their usual starting cornerbacks when they head to Atlanta this weekend. Why is that? Well, we just mentioned Marcus Peters there, but the NFC defending NFC champs traded Marcus Peters to the Baltimore Ravens earlier in the day in exchange for depth linebacker Kenny Young. Peters, a 2-time Pro Bowl selection, will be a free agent next year, so this could be just looking ahead. Still seemed interesting. And then they also put cornerback Aqib Talib on injured reserve Monday after he missed last weekend's loss to San Francisco with a rib injury. So really, in that secondary, needing to add talent and needing to add depth, the Rams also acquired offensive lineman Austin Corbett from the Cleveland Browns. They needed a new left guard after Joe Noteboom's season-ending knee injury. That point was also mentioned this morning on Golic and Wingo. Mike Golic bringing that up, that the O-line, still a huge problem for the Rams. And in fact, part of the whole head-scratching part of this is that The defense, in fact, is playing better than the Rams' offense at this point, but the O-line's still a huge problem for the Rams.
This is the way they choose to go about their business. You get that stellar player at a position, but unfortunately, the position they need the most help at is the offensive line. And they haven't really addressed that. They have 8 injuries. They do the trade. But let me tell you, the moves they did there, not going to make a big difference on that O-line at all.
Ramsey, the talent, undisputable, but has had some issues with his team in the past. Had a very public disagreement with Coach Doug Marrone in week 2 at Houston. Clashed with personnel chief Tom Coughlin after the game. The Jags made their move 5 days owner after Shad Khan said he had a, quote, heart-to-heart with Ramsey, expected him to play against New Orleans last weekend. He didn't, and that prompted the decision to move on. Ramsey under contract through the 2020 season after the Jags exercised his fifth-year $13.7 million option in April, but he wants to get paid here pretty soon. Will LA be the team that ends up doing so? Ramsey will join two prominent ex-Jags in LA, all three of whom were top 5 draft picks by Jacksonville, so clearly they like him there in Los Angeles. Pass rusher Dante Fowler re-signed with the Rams after he was traded from Jacksonville at last season's deadline. And then Blake Bortles, can't forget about Blake Bortles, is Jared Goff's backup after 5 years with the Jags. So, was he worth it trading for 2 first-round picks? Jalen Ramsey, this discussion point on the afternoon show yesterday, Dave Wyman with his thoughts.
Is he that good?
That's a lot to give up, isn't
it?
Two firsts,
man,
and a fourth.
I never thought anybody would do that. 2 firsts and a fourth. Yeah, it's – and, you know, Marcus Peters I thought was a pretty good player. I mean, he did – I think he got beat a couple times in the Seahawk game, but I don't know that – Marcus Peters or that Jalen Ramsey is the greatest teammate in the world. The stunt that he pulled down there with being sick and all that stuff. I mean, you just wonder, about him.
Those sentiments also echoed this morning on Golic and Wingo. Mike Golic saying, yeah, that's a hefty price.
And I'm sure they're just a team that thinks we were in the Super Bowl last year. We just need to tweak occasionally here and there and get back. But unfortunately, they're finding out that's a little more difficult. And we always say about trades, is a guy worth the first-round pick? Well, Khalil Mack, you know, Jalen Ramsey, you're talking about anybody that you think you want your first-rounder to become.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about 2 first-round picks. It is a steep price without a doubt.
Also, the long-term effect of this trade, whether the Rams will actually become the winners or is this just a short-term fix for them, Jason Fitz on it this morning.
Jalen Ramsey is spectacular. He is spectacular. The question is, how much better does it make you? Because you've mortgaged your entire future as an organization. And if you mortgage your entire future as an organization and it doesn't result in a Super Bowl, I don't know how you see that as a win. If it doesn't result in a Super Bowl win, if you're not putting up Lombardi trophies with the way they've gone all in, I'm not sure that the Rams or their fan base will be able to turn around and look at this like it's a win.
The cap hit situation will also be interesting, too. Bob Stelton yesterday noting that the Rams are going to have cap hits, number 1 in cap hits at 3 different positions next year.
From Warren Sharp, rank of LA Rams 2020 cap hits. They've got the number 1 quarterback cap hit with $36 million. For Goff, the number 1 running back cap hit was $17 million for Gurley, the number 1 defensive line cap hit for Aaron Donald at $25 million, and the number 6 wide receiver cap hit $16.8 million for Brandon Cooks. And Ramsey is due $13 million next year, but he's expecting a new deal before he becomes a unrestricted free agent.
Interesting, too. The Rams are on their first 3-game losing streak of McVay's tenure here. The offense, though, more to blame than the defense as of late. Has the NFL just simply figured out Sean McVay and his system? But that makes the moves all the more intriguing. They still have plenty of offensive questions. LA hasn't made a first-round pick since 2016, though, when Jared Goff was the first overall selection. So not making first-round selections has been working for them as of late. Another team that gives up on their first-round picks or doesn't make them all the time, the Patriots. So some teams, it works really well for them. Also yesterday, the first day of the XFL draft is in the book, and the Seattle Dragons had some pretty interesting picks. First of all, their quarterback assignment would be Brandon Silvers of Troy, the 4-year starter at Troy University, passed for over 10,000 yards in his college career. But the offensive skill positions round brought a couple of intriguing names, including some former Seahawks and Keenan Reynolds, the wide receiver out of Navy. He will be familiar to some Seahawks Seahawks fans. And then also Kaysen Williams, wide receiver out of Washington, who was a local fan favorite at Skyline High School, and then also played in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns, or that's when he last played in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns in 2017, caught up with our own Justin McIntyre yesterday at the press conference, talked about being grateful to be back in Seattle.
It really hit me when I saw other UW guys, other local guys, end up playing in other states or for other teams. So for me to be here is, I'm just grateful.
What was the whole process like for Kaysen?
A little nerve-wracking, a little bit, but it was exciting at the same time because I knew my name was going to get called, and that was one thing that I didn't get to experience in the NFL. So just hearing my name, like I didn't really care what draft, what round it was. You know, I just wanted to hear my name called, and it's really cool. It's really cool, and I've been working hard too, so I'm excited to see it pay off and see it pay off at home.
How he's looking forward to the up-tempo style of the XFL.
I honestly don't think it will that much. If anything, you know, we'll be faster tempo, just making sure that we got time. But at the end of the day, it's not really going to change how I play my game. As soon as the ball says hike, that's when the game is played, and we don't have to worry about any clocks when that's going on.
You want to read about Kaysen's journey? Justin McIntyre wrote an incredible story. It's up at 710sports.com right now. Up next on the Blitz, Danny O'Neill going to join me. I want to ask him about this Rams trade, what he thinks this means, how they view their team and their Super Bowl window, contending window, and what that means for the 49ers and the Seahawks. It's next on the Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is the Blitz.
The struggling Rams made a huge trade yesterday. Well, even a couple of them. Now excited to welcome in our own Danny O'Neill. Was it worth it for the Rams? What's up, my friend?
Not much. How are you, Lydia?
I'm good, and I just wanted to give you an appropriate lead-in, so that's why I had to play B.I.G.
I appreciate that. I smell desperation.
Yeah, right?
You smell desperation. They've lost two in a row to the two teams that now lead them in the standings. They deal Marcus Peters, who had been their starting cornerback. Their other starting cornerback, Aqib Talib, is on injured reserve. And now they give up two first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey, for a year and a half of Jalen Ramsey. That's how I'm looking at this trade. They're going to have to extend him. And they've already committed a ton of money. That does not look like a team that is a player away to me. This is a move you make when you're dealing from a position of strength, and I now think the Rams are in a position of weakness. This is great news for the Seattle Seahawks.
That's how I felt when I first heard about it. I felt confident as a Seahawks player, or as a Seahawks fan, and that's a weird position to be in with the Rams, which a year ago, it reminds you how quickly tides can change in the NFL, and them being the team to beat last year and now feels just like, wow, where are they at? I don't know. And also, the concerns really this season have come more on the offensive side of things. So this is also puzzling to me. I know part of it is just need and Aqib Talib going on IR, but at the same time, doesn't part of it like puzzle you because a lot of their problems are on the offensive side of things?
Yes. This doesn't address what will be their fundamental woes, which is, okay, who's going to play tackle for you?
Yeah.
Like your tackles, we've got one guy, Whitworth, who is very clearly near the end of his career. You've got another guy on the other side that are, how sure are you about Haverstein, given the way things have gone?
Mm-hmm.
You lost Roger Saffold in the offseason. That's where your problems are. And now you're giving up your ability to address those problems cost effectively. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're leveraging your ability to solve your problems to add a guy who is a great corner, who I do think does fit in their defense. Wade Phillips loves guys that can run, but you've also got the question there of, okay, is this defense that good? You're probably going to lose Michael Brockers coming up.
Yeah.
It's a puzzling move for me, and it reeks of desperation. It reeks of a team that fears it's falling off the cliff, is about to move into a new stadium, and you've got a GM who looks at this and says, well, you know what? I'm not sure this is going to work, but I'm pretty sure if it doesn't work that I'm losing my job, so I might as well do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it reeks of to me is a GM who looks at it and says, if things don't change, I'm going to get fired. And while I don't know if this will change things, this is the most impactful addition I can make. So I might as well pull the trigger, because if it doesn't work, I'm not going to be around to deal with the fallout anyway.
That's a great point. Do you think the NFL has figured out Sean McVay?
No, I don't. I think that there are some challenges for what McVay does. My working theory is that there was an emphasis on holds on the backside in the offseason.
I think points of emphasis.
Yes, the point of emphasis. I think that was directed at something the Rams did, because I know the Seahawks coaches were very upset about it and tried to make a big point about it leading into the game against the Rams in Seattle last year. And if you remember, that was a game that wasn't decided, but there was a hold call against DJ Fluker late that pushed them back. They ended up not being able to kick a field goal. And there was this the Seattle coaches were furious, because they felt not only was what they had talked to the league about not enforced, but then they ended up being punished for a hold infraction when it was the Rams that were the ones that got away with the most of them. But that's a different story. I think that that has impacted the Rams' ability to run their offense. I think that, combined with the deterioration of Todd Gurley, I think that's the deeper issue. Mm-hmm. I think that Gurley was such a dynamic back, and when that changed about halfway through last season, they haven't been the same offense since. And I don't think Jared Goff is good enough to make up the difference.
Doesn't it remind you how much more impressive Russell Wilson is? That's what I keep coming back to as well, because think of what he's done over the years with less, with an offensive line that has been the worst in the league, or continuously ranked the worst in the league. Not so much anymore, but also the decline. Yes, Marshawn Lynch was here, but they haven't really had a running back that stood out until Chris Carson, and he went through some of those struggles and still put up incredible numbers. So it just reminds me how impressive Russell Wilson is.
Completely agree. And that Seattle had a team that was led by a dominant defense with a dominant running back, and they had a quarterback who was a playmaker, who everybody in 2012, 2013, I really think by 2014 it should have been answered, but there were still people asking the question of, if you really need it from Russell, can he give it to you? If you've got nothing else going for you, does he give you a fighting shot? Which is really what an elite quarterback does. It's no guarantee that you're going to win, but an elite quarterback gives you, every year that he's healthy, you should be competing for a playoff spot. And in any game, if he's at his best, he can make up for a lot of different deficiencies. Russell has shown he's capable of that and more. To me, that's very much an open question on Jared Goff. And, oh, by the way, the Rams have already paid him as if he will be able to do that. They've leveraged an awful lot of their success. People talk about windows of opportunity. The Seahawks clearly don't believe in a window of opportunity.
No.
they believe in being
in a
able
revolving
to,
door of opportunity.
Right, that you get a perennial, that as long as they have the quarterback, that they should be able to expect to make the playoffs. The Rams clearly are in a window of opportunity that is rapidly shutting. They've made a desperation move to try and stall or turn the momentum of that, and desperation rarely works in the NFL.
Ah, well, it's a smell, I guess, that is pleasant to Seahawks fans' noses.
95% of the time it works every time.
Right?
No, it's a different stat,
no,
right?
No.
That's a different cologne.
Different,
I'm sorry.
Different cologne. Danny, thank you so much, my friend. And Washington Wednesday's coming up, and I'll just say I'm excited. You're going to be at the game against Oregon. I'm going to be there. Quick preview of what you think is going to happen. Prediction.
First of all, what's going to happen is the order of the universe is going to right itself, and the cream always rises to the top, and the aberration that was 12 straight defeats will fade further into the rearview mirror. I invite everyone to come on Twitter and contribute to my thread of demonstrations of why the state of Washington is superior to the state of Oregon. I posted a picture of the Enchanted Forest, which is their state's idea of amusement park, pointed out that our mountain is 14,411 feet tall, while their hill is just over 12,000 feet
Ooh,
short.
Yeah, just really getting after them geography-wise. I like it.
That's exactly right. We're going to give them the business. I haven't even gotten into the gas pumping yet.
I love it, Danny. That's awesome. And I will look forward to hearing more at 7 a.m. this morning.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon, Lydia.
Thank you so much. Danny O'Neill, as always, you can hear him and Paul Gallant at 7 a.m. this morning, talking maybe some of that Washington-Oregon rivalry for Washington Wednesdays. Up next on The Blitz, that is exactly our topic of choice. We'll hear from Coach Chris Peterson on Jacob Eason, whether there is an element of his game that he'd like to see him improve. Also, what is his take on the rivalry between Washington and Oregon? It's next on The Blitz right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Blitz from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Welcome back to The Blitz at 6. Lydia Cruz alongside with you. Wednesday, October 16th, just a few days out from homecoming for the UW Huskies. They will be facing off against the Oregon Ducks, set to meet for the 112th time. Series history between these two teams runs deep. The rivalry runs deep, which leads us perfectly to Washington Wednesday.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors, and by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon.
Is another Washington Wednesday. We take a look at the matchup that will happen this weekend against the Ducks and the Huskies. The Huskies have had their struggles this year. Ducks, not so much. But Chris Peterson speaking in the media first off this week, talking about how much he knows about that rivalry and what it means here in Washington. As you could guess, Chris Peterson downplaying it a little, says every game with every opponent, especially in this conference, very important.
I mean, when I first got here, that was always the, you know, that was always the question, you know, and I think everywhere you go, it's always like, there's that question about it. And so it's like, really? So you're good if we don't pay attention to Stanford, and you're good if we don't pay attention to what, you know, it's, I just don't think like that, you know, it's just, to me, it's like, okay, Arizona's the most important thing in our lives last week, and now we're on to this. And that's just how you operate. And, you know, the rivalry things are great for fans and all those type of things. And, you know, and I think rivalries, you know, get going when teams, you know, have good games against each other and it's back and forth. And, you know, certainly we've had some good games here in the last handful of years.
Oregon's defense is playing remarkably well. We've heard a lot about their offense and Justin Herbert, but why they've been so difficult to throw on and hard to get yardage against?
Starts with good players. You know, they got some guys back there to play for now, a couple, 2-3 years. I think Andy's doing a great job. You know, I've known Andy for a long time, and he's an awesome coach. He's got those guys very dialed. I think they're... you know, so it starts there, and then their pass rush, you know, they're a physical group. You know, they just work like they're a rugged group. You know, even if you're blocking them, they keep working. And they got some guys that, you know, have a lot of skill. So it kind of all fits together. I mean, you got to have it hand in hand. If you're going to have a good pass coverage, they can't hold the ball forever, and you can't hold the ball on these guys.
How has the Oregon offense evolved over the last couple of years, even since the Chip Kelly years?
Yeah, this is the pistol offense, so it's much, much different. And so that's a different, I mean, that's a different, you know, different scheme. And they put their own version on it from, you know, when Coach All was running it in Nevada and all those things. But Jim Astro was there with, you know, Chris Ault, and those two guys were, you know, at the very start of that whole thing. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, we remember when it came out, when it first happened, you know, everybody's like, huh, what is this? And then we experienced it for 4 years with Colin Kaepernick. And that's when he was running for a bazillion yards and throwing for a bazillion yards. And so that was, you know, we saw from the ground up and how it evolved and all those things. And so, you know, fast forward, they have their unique spin on it, but it's a power run game. And I think that's what's any type of like spread team. I think first and foremost, they always, 99% of them, you know, want to be a run team, like run the ball. And, you know, that's how it was when Chip was there and Mike Blotti, you know, back when wasn't the pistol, but the spread. I mean, they were just running the heck out of the ball. And once you can do that, throwing the ball is a lot easier. And so they have their style of running the ball. It's a, you know, run first team, and they got a great quarterback back there to complement it.
offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo, someone that Coach Chris Peterson very familiar with. What's his style like down there in Eugene?
You know, I haven't been with him for a while, day-to-day operations, but it's just, you know, he's always a guy that he's a great guy. I mean, he's always just fit into the staff wonderfully, so everybody likes him. And he's, you know, he's smart. You know, I think he's one of those guys that's always on this state of constant improvement and figuring out how to do a little bit better, but staying true to your roots and what you believe in fundamentally and philosophically and all those things. And I mean, those guys play at a high level. There's not assignment errors going on out there. I mean, you're not going to get anything easy on them. They got good players and they're not going to bust anything.
Also, on the Oregon side of things, head coach Mario Cristobal, his opening statement on facing Washington this week, he begins by giving a shout-out to MJ Tafisi, who is doing well after suffering what Chris Peterson called a significant stinger in the third quarter of UW's victory over Arizona last weekend, but then also delves in to what it's like facing the Huskies.
I'm glad to hear that MJ Tafisi is doing well, certainly watching our opponent play this Saturday night. Saw that there was an injury, but glad to hear he's doing well. Thoughts and prayers to him and his family. Feel like our team's getting better. Had certainly some improvement, some advancement in several areas, and at the same time, several other areas that we want to improve upon and have addressed and immediately attacked in Sunday's practice, and will carry over into tomorrow's practice. And then, obviously, a tremendous opportunity and challenge this coming weekend that we're really excited about. So, from a personnel injury standpoint, you know, the big question is, of course, Jake. Jake had an injury on Saturday, and he will not be able to play the rest of the season. Okay. Aside from him, the guys that were injured in the game, Troy Dye, Javon Holland, they're cleared. They're good to go. Like we thought, there were more minor injuries. And that being said, open to questions.
That would be Oregon star tight end Jacob Breland, who is out for the year, was Oregon's leading receiver thus far. So definitely unfortunate news for them on the personnel side of things. But still plenty of weapons in their arsenal. And Chris Peterson talked about their own offense, which had some first half offensive struggles. What was the reason for that?
It's a great question. I mean, we got into a rhythm. We stayed on the field, hit a couple explosives. You know, I mean, it wasn't like we went in there and like, okay, we had the same type of stuff on the game plan, and we're able to make a couple plays, and it was great to get Puka in there and kind of spark this. And you know, we really got no momentum going. I mean, we kind of talked about this after the game. The red zone was more frustrating than anything. We get huge momentum plays to get the ball, and then we don't do anything there. And that was, you know, that's almost, we were going backwards, kind of deflating in terms of, you know, even kicking the field goal. You're not wanting to do that. And so that was, you know, really, I think that rattled everybody, the guys. And so that's kind of how, you know, how the first half went. We were just kind of no rhythm whatsoever. You know, we just didn't get anything going, to stay on the field and convert third downs, you know, those type of things. And then the second half got a little better.
Jacob Eason giving a passionate halftime speech to the squad in the locker room, and Chris Peterson on the initiative that it took to talk to the team. He said it was a good thing and that he's developing as a leader. But one area of Eason's game that he would like to see improvement on.
Well, yes, all those things. You know, I mean, I do. I think all that, he's, you know, he's doing a nice job. But like he said afterwards, you know, he's more on the reserve side. You know, when that ball's in your hand, naturally a lot of guys are going to be looking to you and your voice. And the number one way is, you know, is to lead through example, you know, and play good and do your job, which he's been doing. But it's also nice when he starts kind of speaking out a little bit and bringing something to the table there. And then the game management, you know, is always something, because we're always changing certain things. And I do think he's an accurate thrower. I mean, he showed that. But there's going to always be a quarterback's got a few throws. It's like, wish that was a little more accurate.
The Huskies will face off against Oregon at Husky Stadium this weekend. That game time, kickoff time set for 12:30 p.m. It's going to be on ABC television, the homecoming event. If you are a Dog fan, if you're an Oregon fan, to a slightly lesser degree, come on out to Husky Stadium, because this one is going to be epic. Up next on the Blitz, it is time for the hot list. We've got one team headed to the World Series. We already know it's the Washington Nationals. Congrats to them. Now the Mariners, the only other team never to have appeared now in a World Series. What that means for them, plus what's going on in the Astros-Yankees series. The Astros steal a win on the Yankees' home turf. And more news on the Ramsey on the Jalen Ramsey to the Rams trade. Mina Kimes weighs in. It's next on the Blitz, right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Biggie.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is the Blitz. It's time for the Hot List.
Holy mackerel!
The headlines for the day in sports every morning at 6:45.
Heck yes!
What are we missing here?
A full breakdown of the top stories of today on your morning drive.
Let's go!
Well, the NFL says the number of concussions in exhibition games this year rose from 34 in 2018. That's an increase of 44% and a setback in efforts to reduce brain trauma. Concussions in preseason practices fell, though, to 30 from 45 in 2018. That is maybe a reflection of the NFL's decision to eliminate drills that involved especially violent one-on-one contact. The total of 79 preseason concussions in practicing games was the same a year ago. ACL injuries during the preseason declined to 16 from 28 in 2018. That's good news, but the concussion rate in exhibition games was the highest since 2015. Mina Kimes. We'd love to hear from Mina anytime we can because, yes, she is a Seahawks fan, but also just has great insight and now going to be hosting the new ESPN Daily podcast, which you should subscribe to. But Mina on with Bullock and Wingo this morning talking about how Russell Wilson is clearly the MVP. MVP, MVP. Let's start the chant.
This is the best football I've seen him play. It's kind of crazy to me, honestly, to hear other people being discussed as leading the MVP conversation because it seems to me it's very clearly him right now. And I haven't always felt that way. I'm not uncritical of him, but he is playing out of his mind by every statistical measure, under pressure, in a clean pocket, behind the offensive line that has not improved a lot. Yesterday against the Rams, guys, they didn't have, against Cleveland on Sunday, they didn't have Dwayne Brown. Okay, they trotted out a couple of tight ends blocking for him on the left side, basically. So he has been remarkable, I think, given not only what he's accomplished, but what he's had to work with.
Mina also with some thoughts on the NFC West, the 49ers, and their great start. She says, well, defense is a huge part of it.
This defense is the identity of this squad. Obviously, it's the defense and the run game, Kyle Shanahan's creativity, but that defensive line is arguably the best in the NFL at this moment. The secondary is playing worlds better than I expected. I thought the line would be good. I did not think the secondary outside of Richard Sherman would be playing as well. Obviously, they benefit from the pass rush. But you're right. I don't think we really know who Jimmy Garoppolo is, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because he's playing efficient football. He's not turning the ball over, which has been an issue with him in the past. And I think, as we saw with those Jacksonville teams, if you play efficient football on offense with the quarterback who doesn't turn the ball over, which wasn't always the case with Blake Bortles, you can win games.
Mina, again, the host of the ESPN Daily podcast, we'll hear from her in a second when we get to the Jalen Ramsey trade. She also had some thoughts on if the Rams paid too steep a price for that. Yesterday, the first day of the XFL draft in the books, and the Seattle Dragons, with a few nods to some local players that we know here. First of all, the quarterback assignment is Brandon Silvers of Troy. He is 25 years old, a four-year starter at Troy University, where he passed for over 10,000 yards in his college career, completed 64.4% of his pass attempts, and threw 71 touchdowns, was all Sun Belt as a senior in 2017 after leading the Trojans to a program record 11-2 record, spent time in the NFL with the Eagles and the Jets, started three games for the Memphis Express last spring in the Alliance of American Football League. Also in the offensive skill positions round, they are doing each by different rounds, and offensive skill positions was first up. The Seattle Dragons taking Trey Williams, running back out of Texas A&M, with their first pick, but also some familiar names popping up in round five. Keenan Reynolds, wide receiver out of Navy. He's familiar here in Seattle because he was with Seattle, appeared in two games in 2018, spent most of the 2018 season on the practice squad, and was with the Hawks until they cut their roster down to 53 ahead of the 2019 season at the end of August. He has a great story also. who has a great story. Round 7 pick Cason Williams, the wide receiver out of Washington, now 26 years old. He was a favorite, a high school favorite at Skyline High School. Caught passes from our own Jake Heaps here at 710 ESPN Seattle. Pretty formidable duo that they had going on. Played in college for the UW Huskies and spent 2 seasons with the Seahawks. So pretty cool to see Cason's name called. He was very grateful in his feelings about being back in Seattle, speaking to our own Justin McIntyre yesterday.
Just like it felt when I came out with the Seahawks. It just is like, man, this is what I've been working for. That feeling on top of being at home, it's like, it's almost overwhelming, but at the same time, it's really calming, you know, because I don't want to play anywhere else, you know. This is the only spot that I want to play, so that really calms me down and makes me just embrace the moment and just be in the moment and not think of it as anything bigger than it actually is.
What he'd like to picture his best skill set at.
My first thought was everything, but I want to say being able to go up and get it, go up and get the ball, make contested catches, really good route runner, and then be able to just, you know, be a leader as well, be somebody that the guys can look up to, and just continue to just make as many explosive plays as possible. And then also, obviously, running down on special teams and being impactful in that area, too.
Also, some other familiar names in the offensive lineman draft in round 1, Isaiah Battle, the offensive tackle out of Clemson. Another former Seahawks player, Battle was 5th-round selection of the Rams in 2015, later spent time with Seattle in 2017 and 2018. Now it will be part of the Seattle Dragon squad. Also, in the defensive front, 7 round, round 7 of that, Tani Tupo from Washington, the defensive tackle, also spending time with the Seahawks as well. So a lot of local products, and cool to see there. The draft continues today. Gerrit Cole has been absolutely phenomenal this season, and yesterday, no different, held the New York Yankees scoreless, even without his sharpest stuff, Jose Altuve, sparking Houston at the plate as the Astros locked down a 4-1 victory to take a 2-1 lead in the AL Championship Series yesterday, and they did it in Yankee Stadium. Altuve and Josh Reddick homered early off Luis Severino, who had a tough time getting into the 5th inning while keeping the Yankees close. But the Yankees on offense never able to break through against Cole. Grinded through 7 innings to win his 19th straight decision despite walking 5 batters for the 2nd time in his career. Only 2nd time. Also escaped a bases loaded jam in the 1st and stranded 9 runners through 5. That is absolutely incredible. He is now improved to 3-0 with a 0.40 ERA in 3 playoff outings this year. Up next for the teams, both teams were planning bullpen games today, but a rain out, which is considered likely, about 80% chance of rain at first pitch, that would allow them to bring back the game 1 starters on full rest in game 4 if it gets pushed to Thursday, and probably the biggest beneficiary of that would be the Astros. The Washington Nationals are headed to the World Series for the first time. Exciting for them. They swept the Cardinals pretty unceremoniously yesterday, getting the win they needed on their home turf. So it's cool to see them celebrate Howie Kendrick as the NLCS MVP, and rightfully so, postseason hero. And their manager, Dave Martinez, on how sweet the moment was considering their pretty slow start.
If you look at how where we came from, what we had accomplished to get here, I mean, it wasn't easy. I'll be the first to say, you know, I never doubted these guys. I really didn't. All I kept telling myself, hey, stay with them, stick to the process, stay positive, teach, and as soon as everybody gets healthy, we'll make a run. We'll make a run, and this, you know, we'll get back in this thing. Didn't know how far we'd get back in it, but I really believe that these guys could turn us around right from the get-go, and they did. And
they did, very much so. Howie Kendrick, the MVP of that series, on how the tough times made the moment so much better. Keeping in mind, in May, they went from 19-31 to now having the city's first World Series appearance since 1933, and the first appearance in this team in its current iteration.
You know, the game keeps getting younger, but to see a team like us, you know, continue to grind, and I think the mixture of people that we do have is what makes us so good, the chemistry that we do have. We understand each other. And, you know, I feel like being around this long, I wouldn't change anything about the past, because this is just, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Pretty incredible. And no matter what, they will face off against either the Yankees or the Astros, whoever wins that series. But they will do it at their away stadium, not at their home stadium, because both those teams have better records than the Nats do, although that hasn't seemed to bother them so far this season. They are just such a great story and have been fun to watch so far. The Los Angeles Rams, the big news yesterday, acquired Jalen Ramsey from the Jags Tuesday night. He moves from East Coast to West Coast, and now his mercurial tenure in Jacksonville ends, and it begins with the NFC defending champions, who are going through their own struggles at the moment. Jacksonville got two first-round picks from the Rams, their first-round pick in 2020 and 2021, along with a fourth-round pick in 2021 as well. Let me repeat, two first-round picks. That is a hefty price to pay. Yes, despite the fact that Jalen Ramsey is very talented, earned two Pro Bowl selections, one first-team All-Pro nod in three seasons with the Jags. The fifth overall pick in 2016 also has nine career interceptions. So the talent is there, although, of course, there have been some issues that he's had with the team. And Dave Wyman saying as much yesterday, doesn't know if he was worth it, considering he might not be the best teammate.
Is he that good?
That's a lot to give up, isn't it?
It is,
two firsts,
man,
and a fourth.
I never thought anybody would do that. Two firsts and a fourth. Yeah, it's, and, you know, Marcus Peters, I thought, was a pretty good player. I mean, he did, I think he got beat a couple times in the Seahawk game, but I don't know that Marcus Peter or that Jalen Ramsey is the greatest teammate in the world. The stunt that he pulled down there with being sick and all that stuff, I mean, you just wonder, you wonder about him.
They also needed some depth, considering they also traded cornerback Marcus Peters to the Baltimore Ravens earlier in the day for depth linebacker Kenny Young, and also placing cornerback Aqib Talib on injured reserve Monday after he missed last weekend's loss to San Francisco with a rib injury. So this fills an immediate need for them. But did they pay too much for him? Mina Kimes commenting on it this morning.
For me, when I think about first-round picks and giving up this kind of haul, which it was a haul for Jacksonville, it really depends on the team, where they're at in terms of their roster construction and their aspirations. Clearly, this signals that Los Angeles still views itself as a Super Bowl contender, regardless of what, you know, is happening in San Francisco. They think their time is now. That's fine. I think what makes this a little bit trickier is this: at this moment, they've got a ton of big contracts on the books, right? And when you have those kinds of big contracts, obviously they paid Aaron Donald, they just paid Jared Goff, the Gurley contract's already there. What you typically want to do is augment that with rookies. This obviously limits their ability to do that. So right now they're kind of on a razor's edge.
Bob Stelton commenting on that yesterday in the afternoon show, going over some of their cap limitations.
From Warren Sharp, rank of LA Rams 2020 cap hits. They've got the number one quarterback cap hit with $36 million for Goff, the number one running back cap hit with $17 million for Gurley, the number one defensive line cap hit for Aaron Donald at $25 million, and the number six wide receiver cap hit, $16.8 million for Brandon Cooks. And Ramsey is due a little over $13 million next year, but he's expecting a new deal before he becomes an unrestricted free agent.
Ramsey under contract through the 2020 season after the Jags exercised his fifth-year $13.7 million option in April, and he wants to get paid after that. So this will be interesting. Also considering that the Rams struggled so far this year and now on their first three-game losing streak in McVay's tenure, but most of their struggles have been on offense, not defense. So pretty head-scratching. And also, if you're a Seahawks fan, I think you got to be feeling pretty good this morning, because this seems a little desperate. That's a wrap for the Hot List and the entire Blitz at 6 Hour. Danny and Gallant coming your way in seconds right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.